CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, Dua Lipa with Don't Start Now, CliffCentral.com, and you on a Tuesday morning, 10th of December, it's just after 7. Whew! Lots of people talking about all the stuff that's going on in the news. It's interesting. Cyril, according to people on Twitter, this is the arguments that are happening. I love these arguments. Cyril took over in February 2018. His first priority was to get a new board at Eskom. I remember very well he was about to go to the WEF. Let's not lie. And Kajas Tole, who's been a guest on the Burning Platform a few times, said, actually, no. He installed the new board when he was still deputy president. Then he proceeded to issue illegal instructions to them regarding Anoj Singh and Kokomo Mchela, right? The Labour Court confirmed his actions were illegal. Cyril has a long history of being a part of the problem, not a part of the solution. So anyone who's a big Cyril defender, you've got your work cut out for you.
Sure. Good luck if you are.
Yeah, good luck. This loser went to Medupi for the first time ever 2 weeks ago when he was tasked to sort out Eskom in 2015 as deputy president. People are climbing into Cyril. Sandile, thanks for that. Joe. Yeah, but you see, like, this is where the shit hits the fan for the ANC, because it was all, we didn't mind a bit of stealing while things were working. But if you're stealing and then things stop working.
Yes.
Then people go, now we're going to have to close the taps.
That's my thing, right? Is politicians are thieves everywhere you go in the world. Uh-huh. Everywhere you go.
Yeah, but at least they keep things running so they can keep stealing.
But you see, here's my thing, right?
We don't even do sustainable stealing.
It's like in retail. In retail, there's such a thing as, you know, as shrinkage, yeah. Right? Everybody like has shrinkage. You build it into your costs, and
sure.
That's just the way that it is.
What that things means is like the staff skimming off the top.
Things get pilfered, you know.
Someone who delivers the with the trucks maybe takes some home with him.
It's not as hectic as in The Irishman with that butchery, but there's shrinkage, right? Mm. There's an acceptable percentage beyond which, like, losses become
problematic.
A thing. Mm. Why could we
with
not...
With tears in your eyes.
Could we not, in our entire governing system, and it's not just South Africa, it's the whole of freaking Africa, could we not have an acceptable percentage of shrinkage?
Because then they have to admit that this is happening.
No one has to admit to anything. Everybody just turns a blind eye to the shrinkage. Everybody knows shrinkage happens, right? You just like build it in.
Mm.
That's what we could have lived with that. It is when you have no power. It is when you can't get on the train. It is when, you know, when shit like that begins to affect your everyday life,
mm-hmm.
that you get a revolution. Telling you guys, this country here is ripe. It's ripe for that kind of shit. The good news that we have on our side is we do not have a disciplined army.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
do not have a warmongering general that could. I'm telling you, like.
Yeah. Because if there were,
very strident of you.
There could have been a coup in this country very easily. People would support a strong leader that walked in there and held people by the scruff of their necks.
If he just promised to give electricity.
Threw people in jail. Yeah. Like the kind of, what people want to see, the things that people are saying they want to see. They want to see people go to jail. They want to see heads rolling.
Mm.
They want to see a strong leader standing up and saying, I'm going to fix your shit. Just, this is how it's going to go down. Mm. That is all like, that's a dictator. That's what a dictator does, mm-hmm. right? We're ripe for it, and we would welcome it. Thank God we have Mabenas in our arms.
In this new dawn, though, this is not about to happen anytime soon. Here's some more from our president's newsletter that he's just released. He says, although many of these companies are deeply in debt, they remain valuable state assets with immense capacity. We will not allow any of these strategic entities to fail. Rather, we need to take all necessary steps, even drastic ones, to restore them to health.
Jeez.
And
I like the way Sia delivers it. You actually deliver it with extra sarcasm.
Like, I'm just like bringing in
like with
little
the head
tones,
gestures and everything. Sia, Sia.
An immediate challenge was to end state capture and tackle the corruption that had crippled a number of our state-owned companies. As the new leadership has undertaken this work, several individuals have been charged.
Somebody, right? Please take a video of
some people have been
this.
Charged.
We need to put this video up so people can see. See, and joy and passion.
In some cases, some cases, stolen funds have been recovered. So don't you dare say our dearest Ramaphosa does not work. Listen to him here. I mean, wow. This is the new dawn we've been waiting for, people.
All right, well, here's a good point. This is made by Robin. She says, I'm seriously aggrieved by the lack of consequences for the ANC and the government currency. Currently, there are consequences for me if I fail at my job, which is why I pay hundreds of thousands of rands for medical insurance. But nothing has ever happened over the last 12 years to anyone in the Eskom situation. No one has gone to jail for the fact that they've imperiled our entire nation's economy and ruined the lives of poor people, not to mention businesses. They've caused unbelievable harm to everyone and probably been at the root cause of a lack of economic growth and even steps backwards in that direction. No one's gone to jail. We know who these people are. It's like the SAA people. No one's been held responsible there either. And you know, there's a good point being made by a guy called Jacques Maria on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He says the ANC's failings are 100% down to its people. Look at a fool like Mbalula. What did he know about sport? What did he know about policing? What does he know about transport? But he's a loyal cadre who has progressed through the ranks. Cadre deployment is killing this country. And I mean, that's a good point too. I would literally join the Peaky Blinders at this point if they could assure electricity, because this traffic is so ridiculous. That is from LZ.
Now, speaking of electricity, has anyone been able to fully understand the communication from Eskom?
Oh, you mean why we went to stage 6, there was no stage 5?
The way in which they've been dealing
cancer,
with load shedding over the past couple of days.
The doctor would come in after they'd just discovered like there's one or two cells in you. And the doctor would come in 15 minutes later and go, sorry, you're about to die. Or this just proves that Eskom can't count. The truth is, there are major maintenance issues that were never taken care of. Because money was so busy being stolen and being Gupta-ized that really, I mean, we were buying coal. We paid R1 billion up front for some coal from the Guptas and never got any of it. We paid up front R1 billion for coal and never got one little piece of. You could buy briquettes from the shops. And you would have got a better deal than what you got from the Guptas, ladies and gentlemen. Right?
Yeah, could have gone to Total. Yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. On the way home, buy a couple of bags of coal.
Just don't get it wet.
And now here we are stuck in stage 6.
Just don't get it wet.
I feel a little...
Stage 8 apparently is when they come to your house, they put a pillow over your face and they make sure you never see the light again.
I saw another meme that says, wait for stage 10 when Eskom will come and take your loved ones away because your loved ones bring light into your life. These are the levels of all of this.
South Africans are great.
You know, I was chatting to a friend of mine who lives in the state.
Wait, today's weather forecast. You want to hear what the forecast
Absolutely.
Is?
Sure, what
People
is
are
that?
Worried. Today's cloudy with a chance of electricity.
Just a tiny, tiny chance.
Oh, man.
Electricity in the sky.
I was actually chatting to a friend of mine who's making his way into the country right now, and I felt a little...
embarrassed.
It's like really embarrassed.
It's like if you invite someone to your house and you say, would you like something to drink? Oh, I don't have anything here for you to drink. Would you like some water? And then you open the tap and nothing comes out and you go, let's just sit.
Yeah. in the darkness.
I could make you some tea. Oh, no, kettle's empty. That's what it's like at the moment.
I was
moment.
Asking them, like, where are you staying? Where do you have to go? Oh, just know that these parts will be affected. Yeah, you might not want to use this road. I feel like, oh, man, guys. So and then December's coming. We'll have a flood of tourists, hopefully still coming in. We don't know. But then yesterday I also heard of the tourists who were stuck in the cable car.
Oh, no. What happened?
Yes, in Cape Town.
Oh, so, man, that has got to suck.
Granted, the cable car system have their own backup generator. And so they were saying, no, we'll still operate even though there's load shedding.
Yeah.
Some people got into a cable car. They were midway into their little trek up the mountain. And then there was load shedding and the backup generator could not kick into action. So some tourists had to be stuck in a cable car.
Dude,
embarrassing.
At the place where this we stayed.
Embarrassing.
At the place where we stayed, which was cold and wet and all sorts of terrible things. At the best of times, I don't like going on safari.
By the way, this is Pumi.
Right.
This is Pumi trying to entertain her kid during the holidays. This is what mothers all over have to handle.
Now we're out there, and this is kind of the safari that's close to Joburg, close enough to Joburg. Dudnukeng is great, guys. Mm-hmm. If you're in Joburg or Gauteng and you want a place to go where you can see the Big Five, mm-hmm. this is my little punt for state-owned, state-sponsored,
right.
touristy places.
Uh-huh.
They had a backup generator.
Yes.
But they've got generator times.
Oh, so you only have a generator.
So if there is load shedding between a particular time, the generator would kick in. And literally, guys, the generator is only on from 7 to 9 in the morning so you can make breakfast. From 12 to 1 so you can make
this
lunch.
This doesn't sound like a holiday.
And from 7 to 9 so you can make supper.
And you're paying for this. This does not sound like a thing to do with your kid during the holidays. That's fun. It sounds like going
He doesn't care. Like, he had a good time. He's still there with my sister and his cousins. But he had the time of his life running out in the rain. Because the nice thing is the rain is also, this is not freezing cold rain.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
It's still summer rain.
As long as there's no flooding nearby and huge walls of water coming down the way.
There was some flooding because it's like, you know, it is also like, anyway, it is also out in like
the wilderness.
The wilderness. Mm. So it does have a little, but for him,
he loves it.
He loved it. And there were kids riding their bikes in the mud.
Mm.
They, you know, it's only when you're the parent that you suffer.
But
kids don't give a damn about this thing. You know, there's enough light for them to go outside and play with each other. Candlelight is also very exciting for city kids. It used to be, at least before there was such like standard like load shedding.
Mm-hmm.
It's also exciting. Like you're playing Scrabble or cards and there's like candles.
Yo, look, my house right now looks like a scene from Romeo and Juliet. Yo.
You mean it's romantic and beautiful?
Ooh, candles
well decorated.
Yo, I am just like one suede throw away from being like a Lothario of note.
The chaise lounge.
I'm not even joking. Let me try
to
see his
apartment. It's like that scene in which movie was it where they have all those candles and
is it like tea light candles? Or
I have five
candles
in my room alone.
Wow.
That's a
fire hazard.
No, not really. I have like three in a glass candle cylinder situation. And then I have one, two, three on the kitchen counter. Then I have like another two in the lounge. Ooh, guys.
So Sia's living, you're living this
romance.
All you need now is style, like rose petals.
Yeah. And this way, and the silk throw, I'm telling you, this is happening.
Well, there are lots of people who are not so charmed by it. Why the hell aren't we using renewable energy or putting serious plans to institute instead of this dirty coal
that is
now also wet? That's a good point from Ruth. Ask Gwede, exactly. Morning team, talking about Mbalula. Let's be honest, this guy's a fast learner. He tried his best with police. He's trying to fix PRASA because if we fix our rail system, we cut our transport problems by more than half. Maybe. Maybe. The proof is still in the pudding. I'm not interested in how hard people try. I'm interested in results. And Balula has not done himself very much in the way of favors.
Guys.
Shame.
Uncle Pilchards, we haven't heard from him in a long time.
Uncle Pilchards, as in Titomboen.
Here he is, tweeting about his favorite city in the world.
Kigali. Which one?
Kigali.
Mm.
So he's not in the country either while all of this is going on. Cyril's away. Tito's away. We've got his Praveen running things. No wonder it's a fuck up. What does Tito say? What does he say about Kigali?
The
dreamy city.
Never mind the fact that he's our finance minister. He's talking about none of those things. He is talking, however, about how everybody's convinced him to stay on Twitter.
Oh,
that helps.
All right, well, that was a waste of time to even pay attention to him. Guys, where can we get marijuana? I'm over 2019. I might as well.
Street corner, boy.
That you comes must from grow your own. Anushka.
You must grow your own. It's organic that way.
Listen to this. Here's a funny story. This is from Eddie. Eddie says, I just came back to South Africa after a few months in Thailand. I am having reverse culture shock with load shitting. My luggage never appeared on the carousel. After I flew Ethiopian Airlines, when I wanted to exchange money, the lady responded, we're offline. So I'm reversed culture shock. I'm going to leave and go back to Thailand until you sort your shit up. Apparently a new pickup line that's being used around Johannesburg and other parts of the country at the moment. I have electricity. Want to come to my house?
Wow.
Yes.
That will get people going.
I'm sure. That's a good pickup line.
Mm.
And someone said that she was approached by an Afrikaans dude at a club over the weekend. And he said, come back to my house for a braai at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And it was actually a braai. Ah. She said there was actually a braai going
on. An innocent braai?
Oh, yeah. Did he start the braai when they arrived her?
He wasn't saying a braai as in, let's go to my house and maybe something like that.
Braai is a euphemism for something?
No, he wasn't being euphemistic. He meant a braai. And she
girl.
Got there and there was actually a braai.
No, she
there
clearly
was a braai or
like
he set up
her
a
life.
Braai. There's too much. There are too many questions here. Too many questions.
Well, Kais Toller, who's also a regular on the show, he's retweeted someone called Tasso, who took a picture with Gedleyihle Giza.
In the plane.
Definitely in the plane. So after a long flight this morning, I get a chance to meet my hero unexpectedly, always in good spirit. Good to see you well, Baba. President Jeji Zuma.
Well,
thanks for the picture fixed. Opportunity. More life to you. And he's sitting there going,
Listen properly.
Yeah, so he has not fled the country, contrary to popular belief. He's back in it. Pretoria, there's a massive power outage and a substation fire as well. It's just a big dumpster fire. Let's stop kidding ourselves. It's one of those big dumpster fires. And the entire Pretoria area, traffic lights are off all the way from Hatfield right to the CBD. There are no pointsmen at any points. A lot of patients.
Yeah, because the contractors.
Oh, no.
Also, but the pointsmen are never there in the rain.
Are we going to laugh? Oh. We're going to have to laugh.
You have to laugh.
The pointsmen are never there in the rain anyway, whether the contract has been renewed or not.
I didn't think about that.
No budget for umbrellas.
No budget for umbrellas.
That's going to happen.
Mm.
Good luck.
I don't know what else
South
to
Africa,
say.
Our land. We need as much as a bulk of businesses will be closing down for December. South Africa just needs to close down for December. Let's just close. Let's close for 2 weeks.
You know how
let's
you switch off when your laptop or your phone isn't working properly, the best thing to do is switch it off.
Just restart.
And then switch it on again.
Control-Alt-Delete.
But you need to do that thing where you wait a little while before you switch it on again. You can't switch it off and then immediately. It needs to cool down. It needs to completely, everything needs to go dead. Mm. And then you restart the circuits.
I mean, what bigger signs do we need? Our major airline is dysfunctional. So people are not coming in. If you come in by water, because there are now impromptu rivers everywhere. No, let's just close, guys. Let's close. Oh, no. Let's declare it from Friday the 20th to
next year.
Yeah.
The 5th of January. Do you have,
Monday the 6th of Jan. Yeah. Let's just close.
See ya.
Apparently there's been an earthquake in Japan.
Really?
Well, in the past where for 3 days the electricity was still on. despite the earthquake. But in South Africa, two birds having sex on a wire. Boom, no power for 2 weeks.
I have been watching the new season of The Crown.
Oh, yeah? What do you think?
The Crown is quite a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful series. So well written, spectacular. And I watched an episode over the weekend where there was the blackout. Because of a strike.
That's right. Coal workers. Yeah.
The coal workers
strike.
And this
happened in what, the 60s? In
70s, in I think. I don't know. I don't remember.
60s or 70s. I can't remember. It was during...
But it was quite comforting.
Harold Wilson's term as Prime Minister.
No, it wasn't Wilson. It was the guy between... So Wilson had two terms and then there was a guy in between. So Wilson had a term and then there was another guy.
Anthony Eden.
That's the one.
Was it him?
Yeah, okay. That's the one. And then Wilson came back and then he had to resign because he had Alzheimer's. But anyway, that's not the point of the story. It was quite comforting to be sitting there watching The Crown on my little iPad in the dark and watching the Queen with her like candlelights everywhere.
Yeah.
It was quite comforting for a small moment. I was like, look at this.
By the way,
it
was Edward Heath, not...
electricity outages can be like the great equalizer.
Well, it does kind of remind you. I don't know if the Queen ever sat there with candles, and maybe she was thrilled
to
have.
There was no electricity everywhere.
But let's just also remember, and I hate to be one of those people. I'm not one of those I'm staying people, and I'm also not one of those negative people who complain all the time. But somewhere in between, you got to realize, like we have these phones, we have these things. Now suddenly electricity is massively, you know, important to our survival, our daily survival. But our ancestors didn't have it. And they were fine and they made us. And for thousands upon thousands of years, humans managed.
They still functioned.
Humans managed without electricity. And you know what? We've managed in rain. We've managed in sun. We'll be okay. you've got to maintain a little bit of perspective on this. I'm not excusing it at all. It's totally ridiculous.
That was sounding a little like Winston Churchill-y at the beginning.
Well, it is. We've survived tougher stuff than this, and we will get through this too. Yeah. That's how it works.
That's the perspective we needed. So, Sipumi, you just actually reminded me of something. So, by having to jog Gareth's memory with something. So, I got this ruler for Gareth a little while ago. It has the different rulers of England.
Sia bought it for me at Westminster Abbey, actually.
But then this is what I was shocked by. The other day, he was able to name all of the rulers. Gareth, from which year?
1066.
From 1066 onwards.
Well, I can go look.
I need to understand why you were shocked.
By memory. And he knows each of them from memory in chronological order.
This guy knows the periodic table.
I know. Good point. Good freaking point. Gareth, come on. You just have to please.
It's boring for me to just recite a list. So some of these people are really interesting and some of them are dull. Maybe I'll just give you one thing about
how did you
one.
Get to like... It's not remember this order. Do you know each of them and all of their stories?
Sad,
and their
lonely child who felt
studied
it was,
the periodic table,
who cared too much about knowledge and not enough about friends.
Oh,
wait, Gareth, I need to know about this one because I didn't know about this one, right?
Oh, the Commonwealth.
Yes.
Okay, so that was between when they cut off Charles I's head and when Charles II came back in as the restoration.
So this is 1649, people, 1649.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so 1066 is William I. William the Conqueror lands at Hastings, defeats Harold. William II, killed in the New Forest by an arrow in the eye. They say it was shot by his brother, Henry I, who took over afterwards. After Henry I, you get his daughter Matilda, who's only in for a short while, and then she's displaced by her cousin Stephen.
There so short, she's not even mentioned on the ruler.
Exactly. Oh. Stephen is there for a short while. He tries to put his son Eustace in. That doesn't work so well. Who comes in after that? Henry II, whose surname is Plantagenet, because his father, Geoffrey of Anjou, who's a Frenchman, wears a sprig of broom in his hat. Hmm. Henry II has a bunch of sons. None of them like him. He dies miserable, heartbroken by all of his sons just hating him. And the son who takes over is Richard I. After Richard I, you get John. John loses the entire crown jewels in the Wash, which
Bad
is a
King
place
John.
In North. Bad King John. He was the one who also tormented Robin Hood. Okay. After John, his son Henry III. Henry III is replaced by, he builds Westminster Abbey properly, the way we know it today, by the way. Edward I comes after that, he hammers the Scots. Then Edward II, who dies supposedly in Berkeley Castle by a red-hot poker being thrust into his anus. Edward III takes over and wins a number of battles against the French, and he is the perfect medieval monarch. We've covered him in Blind History. After Edward III, you get Richard II, who is the son of his son, Edward the Black Prince. Richard II is murdered by Henry IV, his cousin, who takes over. Henry IV is succeeded by Henry V, who wins at Agincourt. Henry V is replaced by his weak and pathetic son, Henry VI, who is easily displaced by his cousin, Edward IV. Edward IV is succeeded by his son, Edward V, who dies being murdered, supposedly, by his uncle. Doesn't this sound like a great story of family values?
Isn't it amazing? Like, crazy. These people, like, your cousins.
All right, don't so Edward V is murdered in the Tower as a young boy, and his uncle, Richard III, takes over. He's supposedly the one with the hunchback whose skeleton they discovered in a parking lot in Leicester a couple of years ago. After Richard III, that's the end of the Plantagenet line. It passes to the Tudors because Henry VII beats Richard III at the Battle of Bosworth Field. So Henry VII takes over. He is replaced by his son after he dies, Henry VIII, who's the famous one who has six wives. Henry VIII has three children. All of them succeed him in this order. Edward VI, then Mary I.
Bloody Mary.
And her sister Elizabeth I, Gloriana. After Elizabeth I, the Tudors are finished. There are no more Tudors. So it goes down another line through the Stuarts and goes to King James I of Scotland, the sixth of Scotland, first of England. James I is succeeded by Charles I, who has his head cut off at the end of his reign.
My goodness.
And the Commonwealth comes in there. Then after the Commonwealth, the monarchy is restored under Charles II. Look how bored Gugu is. He's yawning.
You
made me do this.
Gugu is... Gugu.
No, I'm shocked by this.
After
guys,
Charles
come on
II, we have James II, his brother, who tries to bring Catholicism back to England. Doesn't go well for him. He's replaced by William III and Mary, his daughter. Mary is married to William III, by the way. He's Dutch. Then they are quickly succeeded by Mary's sister Anne. And that's the end of the Stuart line. It passes through the Electress of Hanover to the Hanoverians. George I doesn't even speak English. Never learns it. Couldn't be bothered. Actually goes back to Germany to die. He's succeeded by his son, George II. George II hates his father. These Hanoverians all hate their heirs. Huge family issues here. Massive, massive problems. George II, followed by his grandson, George III. George III succeeded by his son, George IV.
It might have something to do with the fact that none of them have an original name.
Correct. After George IV, we get William IV, his brother, who was Duke of York during his reign. And then his third brother, Edward's daughter, Victoria, takes over. Victoria reigns for a long time. She's replaced by Edward VII, her son, when she dies. After Edward VII... it goes to George V. George V succeeded by Edward VIII, who abdicates, becomes Duke of Windsor, and succeeded by his brother George VI, who is the father of the current Queen Elizabeth II.
Who has been queen since 1952.
That is a slow clap and a half. I just realized I'm underutilizing my brain. Like, I don't even know a full track list of a Beyonce album. I can't remember that.
That was five to 10 minutes of your life you will never get back. I'm sorry.
Well, all right. Thanks, Gareth.
But it was riveting. Yes. 10 minutes.
Riggy Riggs says, can't the CEOs of big business just take over running the country for a year and show these imbeciles how it's done?
Whoa.
Hey, listen.
Let's talk about big business.
Yeah.
Has anybody else been having like issues with Vodacom?
Of course.
Why? Why were we having issues with Vodacom? Because the CEOs of big business and the paragon of pre-planning. Wow. After all the load shedding we've had, too were caught in the load shedding rain vortex and their batteries are not sufficient to carry us through 7 days of like stage 90-100 of load shedding. So no,
90-100.
No, thank you. They couldn't pre-plan that. They couldn't pre-plan to say, you know what, Eskom is a fuck up. We need batteries and we need to have backup batteries.
That's right. Correct.
And we pay them. We pay them how much more than other cellular so networks around the world?
So Pumi's right. Let's not talk about big business. I'm not necessarily going to do a better job. Gareth, shut up. This is boring and I'm going back to sleep. At this point, I'd rather listen to Greta Thunberg preaching global warming to me. Like shit.
No, you see what you started, Sia?
Yeah, so that's from Pihleng. Look what you started, Sia. Apologize to Pihleng. All right, and then finally, message here. This is from LZ, who messaged us earlier, and she said, apparently people are also stealing the backup batteries from Vodacom towers, and they've stopped replacing them.
So they've stopped replacing, and they have no security. Yes, they don't have sufficient security after all of the amount of money we pay.
All right. Has anybody else got anything else they want to throw in at this point? You want to do some sport?
Yeah, let's do some sport.
Let's see if there's some good news on that front. Apparently, we want something.
Better be good, man. Otherwise,
we have so many.
People
things.
Are looking for anything that's good at this point.
Well, look, we already did the Blitzborker yesterday, so they're kind of the hope. But on the weekend, a guy called Anthony Joshua, Nigerian-British, won back his heavyweight titles. If you're a boxing fan like me, he beat some fat guy from America. Who beat him the first time, called Andy Ruiz. He's very fat, Gareth. It's embarrassing. He even admitted himself, I came in overweight. It is embarrassing. But now if you're a heavyweight boxing fan like me, Tyson Fury, of course, Wilder, those are the next fights you want to see. Joshua, you want to see what they call a slobber knocker in America. Just these huge guys punching each other. So
that's a good word. A slobber
knocker. Nothing more American than that, hey?
Is it like sumo wrestling?
No, slobber knockers if it's exciting. But you know, Americans, pageantry and all that. So Anthony Joshua, congratulations to him. He won his titles back. And I'm going to say something that Arsenal fans haven't been able to say for 60 days. They won a football match. It is a miracle, like the birth of Jesus Christ.
Really?
The Arsenal Football Club have finally won. They beat West Ham 3-1.
How many games?
Last night. It was 60 days. I think it was 10 games in a row. Arsenal hadn't won. 10 games in a row. So the Gunners have done their thing. And as South Africans, we are all thinking about the Blitzboker this weekend. Can South Africa just win at something? Keep the lights on in Cape Town, please, Eskom. That's it today, Gareth.
Thank you very much, Bulelo. Okay, lots of people commenting on things other than Eskom and Jacob Zuma and SOEs and Prasa. But we don't have time for any of that today, because it is time for an episode of Blind History.
And it's not a British monarch.
No, and this is quite an exciting one because it's 24 minutes long, which is the longest episode of Blind History we've had so far. And it will give you an idea of how bad your rulers could end up being. It's about the bad emperors of Rome. So it's not these good guys that you hear about in these terrific, tremendous history epics, where they're these great emperors who make perfect law and who exercise power judiciously and who command armies with respect and conquer territory and do great things. These are the worst people in history because they have absolute power and corrupts them absolutely. The bad emperors. The latest in our series on Blind History. In fact, it's the final episode of this season of Blind History, but don't worry. We've got season 3 in production. And we're busy planning that now, and it'll start early next year, so get ready for that. But here is Season 2, Episode 13, The Bad Emperors. Augustus, Marcus Aurelius, Hadrian, Trajan, great Roman leaders, master tacticians, military conquerors, and superior administrators, men of the people and the very model of dignity. Caligula, Nero, Commodus, and Elagabalus were none of these things. They were misfits, psychopaths, narcissists, and losers. The worst emperors of Rome murdered and sacrificed thousands and brought dishonor on the Eternal City. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. The final episode of the second season of Blind History with me and my co-host Anthony Medra, who's the MD of Taylor Blinds. This is one we've been waiting to do for a while. It was actually a suggestion of compiling four of the very worst Roman emperors into one episode, because each of them on their own would be fascinating, but you almost want to compare how bad they all were.
And they were shocking.
Shocking. So we've chosen Caligula, Nero, Commodus, and Elagabalus. And some of them are more well-known than others.
That's a great mix.
Doing this research, I was blown away by how absolutely insane some of these guys were. Now, Caligula and Nero were both descendants of the original Julio-Claudians, Julius and Augustus Caesar, who were the greatest emperors of Rome, right? How could they be such disasters? It must have been something in the genes.
More than likely, but if you look at Germanicus, Caligula's dad, revered general, brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and loved little Caligula.
Yeah, he took him on campaign with him. Yeah. The troops actually called him Caligula, which means little boots, because he was running around in the army encampments with a pair of little legionaries' boots on. And they loved him.
And the mother was also Agrippina the Senior.
Yeah, she was the daughter of Julia, who was Augustus's daughter.
And she was stable. He had a great upbringing. But in ancient Rome at the time, if you got too powerful, and Germanicus did get too powerful, he avenged the Teutoburg Forest disaster that was before him. The military loved him. And Tiberius, who was the emperor at the time, got nervous. So he recalled him to Rome and then sent him to the east. And subsequently, he probably killed him.
Yeah.
And then the family, Agrippina the Senior and the two older brothers, were killed, starved to death. So then that must have been the pain that started, possibly that was the rot that started going into Caligula's head.
Well, it's probably worth mentioning at this point that when Caligula did become emperor, he had, first of all, won himself over to the good graces of Tiberius by being a brilliant actor. So he survived because he never let on that he didn't like Tiberius, and therefore Tiberius, by the end of his life, had to nominate someone as his successor and thought, this is a nice little boy, I'll let him be emperor. He was made emperor at a very young age too. I think he was, 16 or something? And for the first 6 months of his time as emperor, he was promising. And then he had a serious bout of illness. People think he might have been epileptic, but he had this serious bout of illness, and that became a completely different kettle of fish, because from there he developed paranoia and he was very, very dangerous, just capricious as all hell, changed his mind like you can't believe, and became alarmingly erratic, according to historians.
Particularly to that story, when he was lying on his deathbed, a lot of senators and a lot of patricians thought, no, this guy's dead. And they didn't go and visit him, or they didn't.
You mean
really,
Tiberius?
No, I'm talking about Caligula. They thought he was going to die when he was so sick.
Oh, right. Okay.
They said, he's on his deathbed. He's not going to make it. And so they started talking behind his back and also not going to see him. And when he recovered, he purged all of them. He took all of them out, and that was the start of it.
Well, there supposedly was incest with his sister, although that could have just been ugliness from the historians who didn't like him after the fact. His sister, that one, Julia Drusilla. Mm. And then when she died, he was heartbroken because he had named her as his heir. He hadn't had children yet.
I think he was in love with it. You know, some people say that he was actually in love with her.
Yeah. And that's where the rumors of incest might have come from. But his other two sisters he wasn't so fond of. He exiled them to some island and they didn't make it. he was supposedly quite childish, and he would taunt people and be very insulting. I mean, he was smart enough to know how to insult people properly, and they would always bear these grudges against him. So he developed a lot of enemies. He loved humiliating the Senate, and he often would joke that he could make anyone a consul, even his horse.
His horse. Then he made his horse a priest, but he died before he could make him a consul. So
his horse was called Incitatus.
And he had a marble stable.
Yeah. I mean, these are the kinds of things that we just...
So maybe there's a bit of softness in there.
Well, sure. He did have some interesting construction projects. Most of them were his luxury homes that he wanted to build. And he established probably the first proper original absolute monarchy in Rome. He started things like treason trials, which were already starting to develop a bad name for themselves. And he, among other things, slept with other men's wives and bragged about it. Mm. That's not a good way to go.
No.
So eventually,
but he didn't care.
No, eventually he taunted the wrong guy, a guy called Caria, who was the Praetorian Guard chief. and they killed him. Yeah. They stabbed him to death. And they say he might have had hyperthyroidism because he was reported to have had this very scary stare. And they always picture him in coins having this very thin neck and this big head. And if you look at people who have hyperthyroidism, they have these bulging eyes, which are kind of scary.
Well, he apparently was ugly. He was tall, pale. He used to contort his face a lot to make people scared of him. The story that sits really, I mean, it's just incredible to think about. It was, obviously they study history books, and it was when Xerxes crossed the Hellespont. Mm-hmm. The legend goes that he built this bridge across the Hellespont with boats. So Caligula thought, no, this sounds brilliant. So across the Bay of Naples. So there was absolutely no point to do that because it would take 1 mile longer if you went by road. A bridge of boats. And he put Alexander the Great's, allegedly, he put Alexander the Great's breastplates on, and he rode up and down, up and down. He even had little places on the way to stop and rest and have food and to prove a point. And also the legend goes further to say that they said, you've got as much chance of being emperor as you have of riding across the Bay of Naples with your horse.
And therefore he wanted to prove them wrong.
Exactly.
Jeez. All right, well, Caligula was just the start of the crazy emperors. Nero came next. Nero started off quite well, too. Also, became emperor at a young age, tutored by Seneca, who was a great tutor. He was an able administrator. And then he started murdering. And he didn't stop. He started by murdering Britannicus, who was his stepbrother, and he was supposed to share the empire with him. So he poisoned Britannicus. Then he murdered his wife, Octavia, who he had executed on trumped-up adultery charges.
Because he was keen on some other lady.
Called Poppaea.
Yeah.
Right, we'll get to her just now. He also sent his own mother to her death. He tried to sink a boat that she was on. And when she managed to swim to shore, they found her, and he ordered that they beat her to death. His own mother.
You know that his mother, she wasn't... She not necessarily. She was sweet, but she had the personality of a black mamba. She poisoned a fair share of people to get him on the throne. Yeah. And then when he jilted her, she wanted to take him out.
Yeah, so there was a really good sense of family values going on in Nero's family.
Agrippina the Younger.
So he did fall in love with a girl called Poppaea, who was apparently very beautiful. And it was all lovely for a long time. Until he eventually ended up kicking her to death
while she was pregnant.
Yeah. So a real charmer.
Yeah, so it really gives you an indication of the character of the man.
So apparently he didn't start the Great Fire of Rome. There are lots of rumors that were written afterwards. But he was quite a good guy at that stage. He offered to pay for people to find new homes. He came in with relief. He redesigned the city, rebuilt much of it in brick because a lot of it had been made of stuff that was flammable before then, like wood. But he wasn't really a good guy. He was pretending to do all of that so he could build an enormous palace for himself called the Domus Aurea.
Very impressive building. There's still some parts of it today, I believe.
Yeah, apparently there were machines that were built to spray perfume on guests the whole time as they walked through it. And there was one room made entirely of gold. And the walls, the ceiling, the floor.
Just getting back to the fire, I can just imagine, you know, we have to look at propaganda and stories being told, but you just imagine your leader is standing on the roof of his palace playing...
The lyre.
Yeah, whatever it might be, and screaming at everybody and going crazy because he really wanted to be an actor. I mean, ultimately, and that's what he wanted to do.
Well, he forced the Senate and everyone who was willing or able to sit around and watch these interminable recitals of his.
Yeah, apparently it was terrible.
Terrible, talentless, just absolutely shit. Couldn't sing, couldn't act, and he was fat.
And he grew a beard because he didn't have a chin. Mm. So he had a few challenges, and he smelled quite bad. So, but the worst was when he built this Domus Aureus, and he started to get a lot of heat, excuse the pun, on the fire.
Yeah.
And so he decided, he needs to find another scapegoat. So the Christians, up until Constantine, the time of Constantine, where they really became the religion in Rome, but up until then they were
a minority.
Yeah, the minority, exactly. Mm. And so what he did was he would – hunt them down. I mean, he would put skins on them so that the wild dogs could eat them. And he had dinner parties at the Domus Aureus, and he would light the Christians.
On fire. Like a human lantern.
Exactly, yeah. So a human lantern, that's exactly what it was, human lanterns. And all his friends and all the patricians would enjoy themselves and have a good evening drinking wine.
While the Christians were burning.
While the Christians were burning.
Holy shit.
And that's how he deflected the, you know, the blame of the fire. But he was a coward.
Yeah, and he also used to do things, stupid things. Like, for example, he went to the Olympic Games in Greece and had himself awarded with all the laurel wreaths. Even though he fell from his chariot, they gave him the wreath because he would have won if he hadn't fallen, that kind of thing. So he is just convinced he was better than everyone else, even though he was very average.
He shouldn't have gone to Greece because, I mean, Rome was, there was the worst famine at that time. It was bankrupt. You know, Claudius, his predecessor, he wasn't half bad. He ruled Rome and they had quite a decent coffer of what he'd built up.
Nero spent it all.
Spent it all. They were bankrupt. Very similar to his uncle, Caligula.
Well, there's a story about how at one stage during one of the games, there was one of the stands that the audience was sitting on. And he got bored because they ran out of prisoners. And there were a whole lot of wild animals in the arena. So he ordered them to just tip all those people into the arena so they could be eaten. Just for fun.
He's definitely working for the people.
Well, he, interestingly enough, was always adored by the plebs. The plebs, for years after his death, continued to worship him as a god. And they thought he was terrific.
But when he realized that the game was up, he went off to his estate in the north of
Rome.
He ran away.
With four of his mates.
But the challenge was none of them wanted to kill him because he couldn't kill himself.
He was too lacking in courage, really, for any of that to happen. But he ordered his men to dig a grave for him. And then when they heard the horses coming, and by the way, the Senate didn't want to have him killed. He was so paranoid, he'd built this whole story up in his head. He said to his mates, look, one of you's got to kill me. So one of them stabbed him. And then the messenger from the Senate got there and tried to save him because they said, we still want you to be emperor because you're the last of this Julio-Claudian dynasty.
On that story of his death, he bungled that as well. He said to one of his servants, you show me how it's done. So he forced his servant to stab himself to show him how he had to commit suicide. So, I mean,
anyway, he expired and he was buried. And the only thing that remained of him, because Romans would go and they would deface the memory of old emperors. So they'd remove them from the record, effectively. And like, they'd chisel out their name off of monuments. But the one thing that remained of Nero's was this enormous statue called the Colossus of Nero, which was right outside the Colosseum. And the Colosseum got its name from that statue eventually. And that leads us on to the third wicked emperor, Commodus, who took that same statue, replaced Nero's head with his head, and put a club in its arm and a lion at its feet to represent Hercules. He thought he was the Roman Hercules.
And Commodus had such a strong lineage.
Yeah, I mean, you love Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah, he's one of my top emperors. And Commodus is just such a disappointment. People say that he was the start of the end of the Roman Empire.
In fact, I think Cassius Dio said, Commodus took Rome from a kingdom of gold to one of iron and rust, which then backs up your theory about Marcus Aurelius being the last of the great emperors.
When you put it into perspective, there was a lot of things that were happening. The grain supply was under threat. There was famine and there was plague, serious plague that it took out a lot of the men that were fighting the wars. And from the economic perspective, those were really the main reasons. Commodus really just played around. You know, it's...
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a time of war because Marcus Aurelius waged nonstop wars. Correct. Commodus was mostly in favor of peace, but it was more his personality that infuriated people.
Exactly.
I mean, Joaquin Phoenix plays the role of Commodus in the movie Gladiator, which was really well done. And he used to actually take to the arena. I mean, Commodus's singular obsession was, in a similar way to Nero, who was the performer, Commodus thought he was a gladiator. But the problem was he didn't really fight fair. So he would dress up as Hercules. He'd have a lion over his head as a headdress. He'd come in there with different weapons, and he'd fight other gladiators, but they would always be at a disadvantage.
What we is now, in our era, think gladiators, and you know, with the movie coming out, they were the scum of the earth.
Yeah, I mean, they were prisoners. They were ruffians.
Nobody, I mean, for an emperor to be getting into the ring with these, it was absolutely crazy. It was beneath him. And they killed him just before his last big stage event. They just said, no, you can't do it anymore. And that's why they killed him.
Well, apparently at that last show, he would take to the arena, and at many other shows before then, he'd go in and he would just murder, like, thousands of animals. He would fire arrows at them, he'd throw javelins at them, but just thousands of animals that he would kill. And as you say, he went through a period of a particularly crummy Roman history in terms of famine and the bankruptcy of the treasury. He used to go around to fill the coffers by executing wealthy citizens and then just confiscating their property. And even that wasn't enough to build up the treasury.
But you know, like Caligula and Nero, you know, it started out okay. Look, Caligula only lasted 6 months. And Commodus didn't rule for very long. The first 4 years were with his dad, which really his dad controlled everything. But he finished the war in that he made peace treaties on the Danube. And then the people back in Rome said, that's brilliant. You know, it's war costs money, et cetera, et cetera. You've done the right thing. But he was just lazy.
Yeah, he was lazy. He was a spoilt brat. He grew up as the son of this great emperor. And there were lots of plots against him while he was emperor, including plots from his own sister, who thought that it would be a good idea to get rid of him and put herself in power. There was a fire also during his reign. So these fires seem to come up every time there's a terrible leader. And he tried to rename Rome. He named Rome Commodiana.
Yeah.
And other provinces he gave his own name. Now, it's interesting that in later English, the commode would come to mean the bathroom, the toilet. And I wonder if that's by mistake or whether that's something that the Romans intended because he left such an ugly legacy.
One of our reports says there is a link.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh.
So that's interesting.
He was left-handed and apparently claimed to be the only left-handed man to have combated and killed 12,000 men.
Impressive.
If that number's right, it just means he murdered 12,000 men. It doesn't mean he fought them in open combat.
No, but he was actually quite handy. He was a very good shot.
Yeah.
He was very good with his arrows, and so he was handy, but everything was rigged, there's no doubt.
Well, they eventually strangled him in the bath.
His trainer strangled him.
A wrestler.
A wrestler. Yeah. Finished him off, and that was the end of him.
And that brings us to the last and probably the weirdest of the Roman emperors. He also had a very short reign from 218 to 222 AD. So four years, but they must have felt to everyone there like a decade because the guy became emperor at 14. Mm. And his real name is lost to history, but it was something like Marcus Aurelius. You know, they would take on the names of other emperors. He eventually called himself Elagabalus. And, you know, if you want to
his
be
His first name was Bassianus.
Well, that...
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it wrong, Gareth, to be honest. But that's how I remembered it, because it's quite a difficult name.
Bassianus.
Bassianus, and it's spelled... The last part is A-N-U-S.
Well, that's fitting, and we'll tell
you
why.
That was his original name, yeah.
I mean, they say he was a little eccentric, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt.
So he called himself Elagabalus because he took on the cult of the Syrian god Elagabal, and... In order to show that he was really devoted to this god, he decided to circumcise himself, which is something that Romans didn't do.
Yeah, that was so off the charts.
And he did it there in public for everyone to see. So that should have been a warning that there was something crazy going on. He had a stone brought to Rome, which was supposedly a meteorite of some kind. And it was a conical shape, black stone that they called Sol Invictus, the embodiment of the sun. And he'd paraded around Rome, and everyone would have to get down on their knees and worship the stone.
His mom was critical and his grandmother to bring him into power. But he was a Syrian. But Caracalla before him, so he also. But what happened, Caracalla was Romanized. He wasn't Romanized. Elagabalus wasn't Romanized at all. He's a proper Syrian. So he came in these weird clothes. His big claim to fame, where he got the military behind him, they were walking the streets in Syria at the time, and they saw he was the high priest at that age. And they said, sure, this is a very attractive young boy. So they all got behind him, and before you knew it, he was...
Romans had no problem getting behind an attractive young boy.
No, definitely not. So the next moment, he was emperor of Rome.
Yeah, so apparently, according to some of the historians, here's an exact quote, he abandoned himself to the grossest pleasures and ungoverned fury. And because he was so young, he had a very strange sexual behavior about him, which they never really have managed to figure out. They think he might have been a transgender person who wanted to transition because he would have paid, according to some people, any amount of money to a surgeon who could build him a vagina.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That was the first time that they'd seen that.
Yeah, and in history, we talk about how some things have always been there. This is definitely proof that that might have been the case with him.
Yeah.
But he would do everything he could. You mentioned he was Syrian. He'd do everything he could to upset the Roman customs. So he married the chief Vestal virgin.
Which was
punishable by death.
Yes.
He would do outrageous things, like he would wear a wig. He would depilate his whole body, so he'd get rid of all the hair on his body. He would paint his eyes like a woman. And then he would prostitute himself around the palace and wherever else he could.
He turned the palace into a prostitution building.
Yeah.
And he would be one of the prostitutes. Yeah. So he was the emperor of Rome. He was one of the prostitutes.
You're still outraged. Yeah. 2,000 years later, you still can't get over it. But he had a string of male lovers. But he also married five different women.
And he had a husband.
Yes.
And that really, that was the final
Zoticus.
Straw. Yeah, but that was the final straw. Because ultimately, in the end, for
had
the Romans.
A husband.
He actually said, I'm your wife.
Yeah.
Nobody minded.
They didn't mind homosexuality. I mean, Hadrian famously was a homosexual emperor, a great emperor, and he had a lover called Antinous, who was his lover for his whole life. But they didn't have a problem with that. With this guy, they had a problem because he wanted to be the bride,
He
not
wanted
the
to be
husband.
The bride, exactly. So the Romans, I thought, no, this is just too much.
Even for them.
And then also the husband, he got upset because Elagabalus started showing eyes for some other guy that he wanted to make his husband. That was just the beginning of the end. Plus his mother had had enough, and his grandmother thought, no, this guy's completely. So he had a cousin, Alexander Severus. And he was going to be the next one. So the mother said, no, we've got to get rid of this oak.
Well, the grandmother was chief in orchestrating the plot to have him killed. I mean, if your gran wants to kill you, you must know you're a pretty awful person. He, according to other quotes I've found, was unspeakably disgusting in his life and the least able emperor Rome ever had.
Yeah, where do you read anything about him being in the Senate or dealing with any administrative?
Just having sex the whole time.
That's all he ever wanted to
Pretty
do.
Pretty much all he was doing.
Yeah. The palace into
You're horrified.
You know, we walk around Rome and we see these beautiful buildings, you know?
You just imagine it was a big racket
it's
for
a big
prostitution.
Racket.
The word heliogabalo in Spanish still means to be very, very greedy. So that's survived him, even though he didn't make it. And eventually when they did get him, he was hiding in a box with his mother, and his grandmother ordered that they just both be slaughtered. So they had their heads cut off, they had their bodies dragged around Rome with a chariot, and then they threw him into the Tiber River.
Yeah, so he wasn't even no honorable burial.
Nothing.
He went down the river into the sea.
Mm. Probably fitting. So those are four emperors you're glad you didn't live during the reign of.
Definitely.
And that is a wrap on season two of Blind History. I hope we finished it suitably dramatically
it was a
enough.
Great ride.
Start off with some really excellent people and end off with the worst.
Slippery slope.
Yeah, thank you for listening. CliffCentral.com